Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
My name is Susie Haynes, and I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, October 1st, 2022. Analysis: average tax bill to drop. Biggest reductions in tax rates came from the Hospital District and Midland College, by Stuart Doreen. The average tax bill inside the City of Midland for fiscal year 2023 will decrease by around $62, according to an analysis of tax rates passed and the expected increase of the average price of a property in Midland. The analysis coincides with the start of the fiscal year, which for many taxing entities begins October 1st. For fiscal year 2022, the five taxing entities combined for a total tax rate of 1.742156 per $100 valuation. Combine that with the average home value inside the city, $295,000 according to the City of Midland, and the tax bill for the most recent fiscal year was $5,139.36. That does not take into account homesteads or any possibility of tax rates being capped. For the upcoming fiscal year, the average home value inside the city, according to the Perryman Group, is said to be $325,000. Combined with an approved tax rate of 1.562397 cents per $100 valuation, and that would result in a total tax bill of $5,077.79. Again, this estimate does not take into account homesteads or any possibility of tax rates being capped. The tax rates used were for those living inside the City of Midland. The taxing entities for Midland residents are Midland ISD, the City of Midland, Midland County, the Hospital District, and Midland College. The biggest reductions in the tax rates came from the Hospital District, 24.9%, Midland College, 20.9%, and Midland ISD, 10.6%. Midland County's tax rate dropped 7.4%, and the city's tax rate fell by 3.3%. The total tax rate for the five entities dropped 10.3%, and that means all Midlanders, generally speaking, should expect a tax decrease, as assessed valuation of a homesteaded residential property can only increase 10% for taxing purposes. Past analysis of tax bills inside the City of Midland showed ranges of $4,432 to $4,985 between fiscal year 2019 and fiscal year 2021. Texas School District uses motel to ease teacher crisis. Fort Stockton converts old motel into cheap housing for teachers, by Becca McNeil. Every day after work, veteran English teacher Stacy Eli pulls into the parking lot of the Spanish Trail Lodge in Fort Stockton, a small town in far west Texas. She parks right in front of her door in the motor court-style hotel and settles into a small, recently refurbished room with an ensuite bathroom, Saltillo tiles, a mini fridge, and Southwest-style fixtures. The cozy motel room is home these days, and it's one reason Eli took the job with the Fort Stockton Independent School District. That, and the $80,000 salary. In order to secure a livable retirement, Eli, 54, temporarily left the spacious home 500 miles away she built with her husband, a former professional bull rider, who stayed behind. "He's a cowboy, and he likes cowboying it at home," Eli said of her husband. She rents her room for $250 a month from the Fort Stockton School District, which purchased the motel in December for $705,000 out of its budget, part of a multifaceted plan to recruit teachers amid a chronic shortage. The plan also includes hefty salaries for the teaching positions the 2,200-student district needs the most. The district's teacher shortage, made all the worse by the COVID-19 pandemic, mirrors a reality seen in many parts of the country. Historically speaking, teacher shortages are nothing new to rural districts, District Superintendent Gabriel Zamora said, but we're not struggling for teachers now. Lured by higher salaries and low-cost housing, the district has filled all of its critical positions, said Ember Renteria, its head of personnel, and it's filled them with well-qualified teachers. Normally, we were just looking for anyone who was willing to teach, she said. There's been a big difference this year. If you pay them, they will come. Zamora wasn't in Fort Stockton when the pandemic started, but he has always worked in the kind of very small rural district struggling to fill slots. After years of innovation and recruiting, the pandemic was a massive setback. Whatever ground we gained, we were losing, Zamora said. The pivot to virtual learning and then again to hybrid learning pushed many teachers past their breaking point and out of the profession. When he looked at the staffing situation in Fort Stockton in 2021, he saw that, as in most other rural districts, the pandemic had made another hole in the bucket. He arrived in Fort Stockton in June 2021 and immediately got to work figuring out how to get more teachers into the district and how to get the experienced teachers already on the payroll to transfer into positions like math, English, and science that are harder to fill. Instead of teachers being lured into electives by the lack of stress, as often happens, he said he's trying to hire experienced teachers to the core subjects with a bigger paycheck, up to $72,000 for a first-year teacher, more for experienced teachers like Eli. For the 8th grade English teacher, this was a golden opportunity to stash away the $80,000 salary. The position is usually hard to fill because subjects that are covered by state exams are typically more stressful, but the bump in pay made it worth her while. That's exactly what Zamora was counting on. He's no stranger to the disincentives facing the teacher profession. Starting salaries are too low to appeal to many college graduates, especially those carrying college debt. From there, most districts follow a set pay schedule based on years of experience. If a district follows the minimum pay scale, as many small rural schools do, it takes a teacher 20 years to get to $54,000. He looked at the funding he had available for his 180 teacher salaries this school year and found a way to pay them according to how much the district needed to fill the position. The average salary for Fort Stockton teachers in 2021 through 22 was $53,000. The state average is around $56,000. But now, for instance, a first-year teacher in a high school math class could make around $72,500. If a veteran teacher takes that position, they'll make even more. But even at $70,000, Zamora said, housing prices in Fort Stockton were another large hurdle. The housing stock is mostly single-family homes, many of them older. Oil companies drilling nearby offer relatively generous housing stipends to their workers, but with home appraisals on the rise, landlords are charging top dollar. The district built 12 brick duplexes, similar to what one might see in a suburban development, complete with a playground, in a shared fenced yard behind them. Teachers can rent those for $750 to $800 a month. That's great for families, Zamora knew. But when the Spanish Trail Lodge came up for sale last December, he knew it would sweeten the deal for even more recruits. He was thinking of young teachers not ready for home ownership, as well as older teachers who aren't necessarily looking to uproot their lives, but need to be thinking about their financial future, like Eli. Eli wasn't permanently relocating 500 miles away. Her husband, 6 kids, and 4 grandchildren are still back in Emory, a tiny rural town east of Dallas. But Eli knew she couldn't end her career there, where the district was on the state minimum salary schedule, if she wanted to have a stable income in retirement. She could retire with a yearly stipend of 60% of about $55,000, or 60% of the $80,000 she'll make in Fort Stockton. It was a huge raise, but the Spanish Trail Lodge gave her the opportunity to take home even more by cutting out her biggest expense, a market-rate rental. I didn't want all of my raise to go to housing when we own a home, she said. In the 29 years she's been teaching, Eli has made a lot of sacrifices. She's driven 45 minutes to work each way. She's worked for the state minimum teacher salary. She's taken on extra classes when positions went unfilled. She's been happy to do it, she said, because she loves her job and loves the middle school kids she teaches. But now she has to think about her future. It feels almost sacrilegious to say so, Eli said, because teachers are trained and conditioned to be all about the kids. They are praised when they are, in a way, martyrs to the profession, she said. I've done 29 years for the kids, and I have to start thinking about my retirement. She flies home to see her family when she can, but soon she'll be able to take advantage of another perk. For the first time in her teaching career, Eli won't have to work through the summer, either picking up summer school classes or a side gig. The motel is great in the meantime, she said. In the center of the horseshoe-shaped motor court, there's a freestanding house where the proprietor lived. The district turned it into a clubhouse of sorts, with a large kitchen, two living rooms with recliners, and large flat-screen TVs, a workout room with new equipment, and a laundry room with washers and dryers. One of the administrative assistants in Samora's office was in charge of making the clubhouse homey, Samora said, nodding to the decorative vases, potted plants, and other decor in the living rooms. She really got into it. It's not uncommon for the rural districts to provide housing for teachers and administrators, Samora said, but the hotel with its rock-bottom rent was something new. Not everyone in town has been happy about the district's housing plans, Samora said. Landlords have been able to charge $1,500 or more simply because of supply and demand. In a town of 8,000 people, it doesn't take much to disrupt the market. Fort Stockton High School principal Ken Wallace had already paid the oil-filled premium once and wasn't keen to do it again. Oil companies offer workers housing stipends high enough to drive rents well beyond what local residents are used to. He was coaching in a small Texas town when the market boomed and watched his rent triple within a year. When he moved to Fort Stockton for the principal's job this year, he recognized what was happening with the housing market and opted for the Spanish Trail Lodge. As the only school administrator in the motel, the district offered him a double room since he would be something of an acting resident assistant on site, a link to district administration should anything go awry. But it's not like rowdy college kids, he said. These hardworking professionals just want some peace and quiet when they get home. We're all here, and we see each other, but everyone kind of understands, Wallace said. We try not to step on each other. Wallace's own retirement calculations include running Airbnb properties with his wife, who stayed behind in Goliad, 400 miles away, until the house they are renovating there was ready to start earning income. He wouldn't have been able to take on another mortgage or an equally high rent. That's the only reason we can swing it, Wallace said. It's a total game changer as far as being able to be housed. MDC to finalize demolition of Western United Life Building. Final details to be ironed out Monday. Mark's first demo since 2019 by Ben Schaefer. The former Western United Life Building could be a step closer to demolition on Monday. The property on 300 West Texas Avenue is one of four downtown addresses tentatively scheduled for demolition in late October. The MDC board is meeting Monday to finalize official documents. The contract is effective as of October 25th, it states. The other addresses are 211 and 221 North Colorado Street and 210 North Big Spring Street. The MDC hired Midwest Wrecking Company of Texas Incorporated to carry out the project. It will cost nearly $3.5 million. In July 2018, the MDC board approved a purchase price of $3.775 million for the former Western United Life building. City and MDC officials had looked into turning the former Western United Life building into office spaces, lofts, a hotel, or something else. The MDC also had purchased J.L. Davis properties at 210 North Big Spring and 211 North Colorado in January for an appraised price of $4.9 million. Any demolition downtown will be the first since the building of the Southwest in March 2019. Other higher-profile downtown demolition projects included Midland Center in February 2017, the historical Midland County Courthouse in December 2015, the Midland Savings Building in November 2008, and the Metro Building in November 2008. Midwest Wrecking Company stated the next round of buildings will be torn down using conventional methods, including implosion, in a letter to the MDC. The demolition company will also provide funding for the cost of lane closures and protection for surrounding properties. Midland Community Theater announces the 2023 season by Morgan Taylor Thomas. Packed with musicals, comedies, classics, thrillers, and more, the Midland Community Theater gave the Reporter-Telegram the inside scoop on their 2023 season. For information on tickets and the theater, please visit www.mctmidland.org. The 2023 season is as follows. Opening musical, What? Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. When? February 3rd through March 4th. Where? Davis Theater 1. Spring drama, Pickwicks. What? Sense and Sensibility. When? March 24th through April 15th. Where? Maybe Theater 2. Spring musical, What? Rock of Ages. When? April 28th through May 13th. Where? Davis Theater 1. Summer musical, Pickwicks. What? Leader of the Pack. When? July 14th through 23rd. Where? Davis Theater 1. Fall comedy. What? Rumors. When? September 8th through the 30th. Where? Maybe Theater 2. Fall drama, Pickwick. What? The Diary of Anne Frank. When? October 6th through the 15th. Where? Davis Theater 1. Fall mystery. What? The Girl on the Train. When? October 20th through November 11th. Where? Maybe Theater 2. Holiday musical. What? The Sound of Music. When? November 17th through December 16th. Where? Davis Theater 1. DA. Latest DWI means 25-year sentence for Midland Man. By Ben Schaefer. A Midland man was sentenced to 25 years in prison for driving while intoxicated, according to press release from Midland County District Attorney's Office. Miles Trahan's trial began Tuesday morning, and a jury found the 42-year-old guilty of the charge Wednesday afternoon. Trahan and the District Attorney's Office reached an agreement prior to the punishment phase of the trial, according to the press release. The agreement stated Trahan would agree to a sentencing of 25 years and waive any right to appeal the jury verdict. The press release states that Midland Police Department stopped Trahan for erratic driving on Loop 250 in North Midland. Trahan refused to participate in a field sobriety and breath test, but admitted he was intoxicated, the district attorney's office released. MPD found multiple alcohol containers in his vehicle, the press release stated. A search warrant was obtained by police to test Trahan's blood. The blood alcohol concentration was 0.129. The standard for intoxication in Texas is 0.08, according to the district attorney's office. Later, it was established that Trahan had been arrested at least 6 times previously for DWI in Midland, Ector, and El Paso counties, as well as out of state. At the time of his arrest, Trahan was still on parole for his last prison sentence, according to the release. The district attorney's office said that with his history, Trahan could receive life imprisonment. According to the county, he will serve at least 1/4 of his sentence before being eligible for parole. DPS, Midlander dies Thursday in collision in Ward County. A 30-year-old Midlander died in a collision Thursday evening in Ward County, according to the Department of Public Safety. DPS officials reported Alan Salas was pronounced dead at the scene after the 2015 Ford F-250 he was driving eastbound crossed into the westbound lane of Ranch to Market Road 2355, where it struck a 2015 Volvo truck tractor with trailer head-on. The driver of the truck tractor was transported to Ward Memorial Hospital, where he was in stable condition. The crash happened around 6:29 p.m., 1 mile west of Pyote. Salas was wearing his seatbelt. Community Roundup and Calendar. Elections Office needs bilingual workers. The Midland County Elections Office is looking for bilingual workers to help with early voting. Those interested or able to speak English and Spanish can give the Elections Office a call at 432-688-4890. Openings on city boards, commissions. There are 8 seats available due to term expirations or vacancies on City of Midland boards and commissions. The City Council began making appointments in September for the new fiscal year. The majority of terms will begin on October 1st. Terms generally vary from 2 to 4 years. A complete list of boards and commissions, along with meeting schedules, is attached to the application form and can be found on the City's website. Applications are available at the City Secretary's Office, Room 330, City Hall, 685-7441. The application can also be downloaded from the City website at www.midlandtexas.gov. Select Government, and then click on Boards and Commissions. The deadline for application is 5 p.m. Tuesday. Following is a list of remaining board commissions which have open seats. Midland Odessa Urban Transit District Board, 1 seat. Parks and Recreation Commission, 2 seats. Zoning Board of Adjustment and Airport Zoning Board of Adjustment, 1 seat and 4 alternate seats. Midland Association of Retired School Personnel. The Midland Association of Retired School Personnel will host its next meeting on Thursday at First Baptist Church, 2104 West Louisiana Avenue. The meeting will begin at 11:45 a.m. and lunch will be $6. For reservations, call, text, or email Anita Patton at 349-6822 or apatton123 at SBC Global. Texas Size Garage Sale. Senior Life Midland will have its Texas Size Garage Sale from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. October 7th through 8th and 11th through 12th at 407 East Scarborough Drive. There is a VIP shopping experience where people can get a sneak peek of the items. That will take place September 20th from 5 to 8 p.m. and the cost is $50. Call 432-689-6693 for more information. Scholarships for Writers Workshop. There will be full-ride scholarships to students in West Texas high schools, colleges, and the University of Texas Permian Basin, as well as to 4 teachers of English or deserving youth to an annual Writers Workshop on October 8th through 9th at Midland College. For a full list of events and participating authors and agents, see https://pbbookies.com/permian-basin-writers-workshop/. MLK Programs for Kids. The City of Midland Parks and Recreation will be hosting new programs for kids at the MLK Center, 2300 Butternut Lane, starting October 3rd. They include Monday, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., game nights for ages 6 through 14 years of age. We will have a variety of board games for the kids to play. Thursday, 5:30 to 7 p.m., arts and crafts for ages 6 through 14 years of age. Wednesday, 11 a.m., story time for tots. Each program will be $1 to participate and can be paid at the front desk upon arrival. Please contact LaSalle M. Williams at lswilliams@midlandtexas.gov for more information. Calendar. Texas Size Garage Sale, October 7th and 8th and October 11th through 12th, 407 East Scarborough Drive. Writers Workshop, October 8th through 9th, Midland College. Pink in the Park, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., October 15th, Centennial Park. City of Midland Health Department, in conjunction with Familia Dental, Fall Festival and Resource Fair, 1 to 4 p.m., October 15th, Dennis the Menace Park, 2201 West Indiana Avenue. 33rd Annual Tom Arnold Memorial Fish Fry, 5 to 8 p.m., October 15th, American Legion Building, 501 Veterans Air Park Lane. Midland Northside Lions Club 19th Annual Roar with Laughter Hilarity Review Fundraiser, 7:30 p.m., October 15th, Hispanic Cultural Center. Alzheimer's Association to End Alzheimer's, 9 a.m., October 15th, Cimarex Pavilion, 5514 Champions Drive. Visit alz.org/walk. West Texas Women's Symposium, October 19th through 20th, Bush Convention Center. Fall Festivals, Trunk or Treats, Country Fairs. Midland Police Department Candy for Cans Trunk or Treat, 6 to 8 p.m., October 21st, Hogan Park, 1201 East Wadley Avenue. Midland Fire Department Trunk or Treat, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., October 22nd, Central Fire Station, 1500 West Wall Street. Midland Bible Church Country Fair, 4 to 7 p.m., October 30th, 5900 Whitman. Election 2022, Debates Forum Scheduled. Reporter Telegram, MISD Debates, October 18th, District 3, 7 p.m., District 5, 7:45 p.m., District 6, 8:30 p.m., at Carrasco Room at Midland College. Reporter Telegram, City of Midland Debates, October 20th, District 4, 7 p.m., Mayoral, 7:50 p.m., at Carrasco Room at Midland College. League of Women Voters on October 6th, MISD, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m., and City of Midland, 6:45 to 7:45 p.m., inside the Carrasco Room. Basin PBS on October 11th, 13th, and 17th, the debates will be televised. MISD School Board from 7 to 8:30 p.m. on October 11th, Mayoral Forum from 7 to 8 p.m. on October 13th, and Midland City Council from 7 to 8 p.m. on October 17th. The Midland Republican National Hispanic Assembly will have forums on October 17th and 19th. The MISD candidates will go from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. at the Spring Hill Suites, 5716 Deauville Boulevard. The Midland City Council forums will be from 11:30 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. Mayor, on October 19th, and from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m., District 4. The Negro Business and Professional Women's Club of Midland on October 22nd at the MLK Junior Community Center. The forums will include judges, school board, and city council candidates at 10 a.m. and mayoral candidates at 1 p.m. A War Against Nutsedge Can Be Won with Diligence, by Jeff Floyd. Nutsedge is a weedy, grass-like perennial that invades vegetable gardens, flower beds, and turf grass, especially wherever water and sunlight are abundant. It is often called nutgrass and frequently mistaken as a type of grass. It coexists with natural turf and from a distance resembles grass in both width, color, and growth pattern. However, distinguishing it from long grass species is important for eliminating or controlling it. The stem of sedges are triangular shaped when viewing a cross section. The tips of nutsedge taper to a point quickly. The foliage is usually shiny. There are two predominant types of nutsedge familiar to homeowners, yellow and purple nutsedge. The most common of these in Texas is purple nutsedge. Sedges grow from underground tubers or nutlets that resemble tiny potatoes. Every nutlet has up to 11 eyes, with each eye capable of sprouting a new plant. The nutlets are connected to others by a series of root-like chains beneath the soil, creating a network of plants that can quickly cover several feet. The weed is tough and prolific, making it difficult to control. Each nutlet contains enough resources to resprout multiple times. Once it sprouts, it can produce several thousand viable seeds at maturity. Multiple techniques must be used to kill or control nutsedge. Methods of control include digging, chemicals, and adjustments that reduce its ability to develop. Purple nutsedge grows well in wet locations. Eliminating sources of standing water will help reduce its spread. Cultural methods, such as digging, require the removal of large amounts of soil, up to 10 inches deep. Chemical applications, using both selective and broad-spectrum herbicides, can also be used to control nutsedge. Active ingredients, such as imazacin, halosulfuron, and sulfotrazone, are labeled for control of nutsedge. Products containing these chemicals can usually be found at garden centers and home improvement stores. Each of these has advantages and disadvantages and limitations on how frequently they can be used. As with all chemicals, read and follow the directions. A combination of methods is usually necessary to eliminate nutsedge. Controlling it is usually a much more achievable goal than eradicating it. If you decide to deal with nutsedge, approach it as a war with many battles. It will continue to frustrate you by repeatedly sprouting, but with diligence, you can eventually win the war. The Texas Trio performs live at Schaap Center. Free concert, Saturday, October 8th at 7:30 p.m., Al G. Langford Chaparral Center, 3600 North Garfield, Midland, Texas. Bring your favorite dance partner. Grab your boots and join in MC's 50th anniversary celebration featuring country artist Kyle Park and two-time Grammy Award winner Jason Roberts and keyboardist John Michael Whitby from George Strait's Ace in the Hole Band. Come early to enjoy some of Midland's best food trucks, including Gilly's Mobile Diner, Brown's Barbecue LLC, Marty G's Cajun Eats, Keats Sweets, Cliff's Food Wagon, and Tubby's Mobile Kitchen. What's up with Midland? Christchurch Anglican, Festival of St. Francis Pet Blessing, and 5K, October 22nd. The Garlic Press, Beer Dinner, October 17th. Hispanic Culture Center, Roar with Laughter, hosted by Midland Northside Lions Club, October 15th. Jake's Clays, Saving True Pears and Pink the Basin, 10th Anniversary, October 7th. Midland Beer Garden, Legends of Hip Hop Karaoke, Saturday. Midland Community Theater, A Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, Maybe Theater 2, Saturday. Midland Humane Coalition, Farista Gala, October 22nd. Museum of the Southwest, Midland Downtown Farmers Market, 8 a.m. to 12 p.m. every Saturday. Permian Basin Bookies Incorporated, Writer's Workshop, October 8th through 9th, Divas 3, October 11th, and Cinema Under the Stars, Hocus Pocus, October 20th. Obituaries, Dorothy Gloria Hale Davis. Dorothy entered this world in the small West Texas town of Roby, the only child of Iva and J.W. Hale. Dorothy was preceded in death by her father, J.W. Hale, her mother, Iva Hilbin, her grandson, Todd Davis Bachman, and her son, Russell Lee Davis. She is survived by daughter Diane Davis of Spicewood, daughter Debbie Grimsley, and one grandson and two great-grandsons, all of Brownwood. A graveside service will be held at the Austin Memorial Park Cemetery, 2800 Hancock Drive, on Tuesday, October 4th, 2022, at 11 o'clock a.m. Those who come to show their respects will have a chance to share a memory or a story about Dorothy. In lieu of flowers, contributions can be made to Meals on Wheels or any charity of your choice, or you may simply share an act of kindness in Dorothy's memory. Fond memories and expressions of sympathy may be shared at www.cookwaldenfuneralhome.com for the Davis family. Glenn Dathan Madison. Glenn Dathan Madison, age 83, of Stanton, Texas, passed away Thursday, September 29, 2022. Graveside services were held at 10 a.m. Monday, October 3, 2022, at Evergreen Cemetery Chapel. Glenn was born to Claudine and E.P. Madison on December 17, 1938, in Colorado City, Texas. Glenn was preceded in death by his parents, his first wife Anne, brothers-in-law Anthony Hansen and Bobby Hansen, and uncle Harlan Barber. He is survived by his wife Glenda Madison, his sons Greg, Jeff, and Randy, and 9 grandchildren. Arrangements are under the direction of Gilbreth Funeral Home of Stanton. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Sarah Chapman Hardwick. Sarah Chapman Hardwick was born to Era S. and Nettles Ford Chapman on April 3, 1919, on land her parents were homesteading outside Demi, New Mexico. She died peacefully on September 18, 2022, at age 103. Sarah was predeceased by her parents and by her brother and 4 sisters. She was also predeceased by her beloved husband, Jim, after nearly 62 years of marriage. She is survived by her 2 sons, Clifford and Mark, and 2 daughters, Nancy Gerhardt and Sarah Bell. She is also survived by 11 grandchildren and 21 great-grandchildren. In lieu of flowers, the family request that you make a donation to the Manor Park Endowment Fund or the Deacons Fund at the First Presbyterian Church of Midland. Services celebrating her life will be October 22, 2022, at 2 p.m. in the chapel at Manor Park.
This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, October 1st. Pease STEM Lab opens. Even before the ribbon cutting for Pease Elementary School's new STEM Center Friday, students were happily learning with their BeBots and OzoBots and working on circuits. They absolutely love it, Pease principal Micah Arrett said. The opportunities that these kids are going to have that they weren't going to have otherwise is amazing. Being able to collaborate with others, problem solve, engage in the work, be creative, all of those things we did not have. A lot of people did this for us, so from the bottom of our hearts, 600 little hearts, I want to thank PSP and the Ripken Foundation, because without this opportunity, these kids would not have this. 7-year-old second grader Emiliano Escargesa said he thinks the lab is so cool. He likes the BeBots, Legos, and dominoes. The lab is the result of a partnership between the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation and Permian Strategic Partnership. It includes state-of-the-art STEM education products, technology, furniture, and more for students of the local communities. The Pease STEM Center is one of 134 to be installed over the next 5 years and one of 50 to be installed in 2022 through the $7.5 million partnership between the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation and the PSP announced earlier this year. It will reach over 60,000 students and 2,000 teachers in 22 counties, a news release said. Ector County ISD Associate Superintendent of Curriculum and Instruction, Lilia Nanez, said the impact of this multi-district gift cannot be overstated. Officials from Midland and Monahan were on hand. This is a collaborative effort, Nanez said. We had training right in this room with teachers from across the Permian Basin. Crane, Monahan's, Andrews, and of course, ECISD, just a few weeks ago to prepare the teachers to bring these STEM labs to life for all of our children. It is incredible to watch, and you can see for yourself how quickly students comprehend the complex systems within the STEM labs. These experiences create the memory within each student, no matter what school they attend, no matter which neighborhood they live in, and open up so many opportunities for them. PSP President and CEO Tracy Bentley introduced PSP Chairman Don Evans and noted that 2 board members flew in especially for the occasion. A representative from Pioneer was also there. Thanks to this collaboration, we can bring world-class instruction and educational resources to the students of the Permian Basin. The Pease Elementary STEM Center will provide students with the opportunity to learn about science, technology, and engineering, and math in a very hands-on environment, as you can see. Through project-based learning, students can apply what they're learning in the classroom to real-world problems. It will not only teach them problem-solving skills, but also help them grow in learning, teamwork, successful communication, creativity, leadership, and entrepreneurship, Bentley said. Additionally, she said the STEM Center will expose students to careers that they may not have learned about otherwise. PEAS will become known for preparing its students for success in the 21st century workforce. The importance of investing in education has never been more apparent. In a rapidly changing world, students must learn the skills they need to prepare for the future workforce. This is especially true right here in the Permian Basin. We've seen an improvement in the quality of education in our region, but more is needed to prepare our students for the ever-growing workforce. And grow it will. The Permian Basin's prominence is rising as the demand for clean and safe, reliable energy supplies grows, Bentley said. Currently, this region accounts for nearly 8% of the Texas GDP and more than 700,000 jobs nationwide. By 2025, 40% of U.S. oil production will come from right here in the Permian Basin. To reach such incredible output, the Permian will create 50,000 new jobs, requiring math, science, engineering, and critical thinking skills, she added. By training the next generation of workers in science, technology, engineering, and math, we can ensure that the Permian Basin remains a vital part of the global economy for years and years to come. Steve Salem, president and CEO of the Cal Ripken Senior Foundation, said Cal and Billy Ripken started the foundation in honor of their father, Cal Ripken Sr. Salem said Cal Ripken Sr. was a great mentor to many young athletes and young people during his professional coaching career with the Baltimore Orioles. The Ripken Foundation's mission is to impact the lives of kids from sports, recreation, and educational programs to provide opportunities while also keeping kids safe in the communities where they live across the country, Salem said. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, October 1st. Odessa Athletics Hall of Fame, 1989, Perfection for Mojo Games. Editor's Note. Enjoy this look back at two of this year's Odessa Athletics Hall of Fame honorees. This year's banquet is scheduled for November 3rd at the Odessa Marriott. Other honorees include track star Kerry Evans, gridiron greats Glenn Halsall and Lloyd Hill, and also the 1946 Odessa High Broncos state champion football team. They were coming off a roller coaster season that ended with a heartbreaking loss in the semifinals. The bitter aftertaste of falling short of its state championship stayed with the players during that offseason in 1989 at Permian. They were mad, but head coach Gary Gaines and his Permian football players used that as motivation and took their frustrations out on every opponent. By the end of the year, the Panthers ended the decade the same way it had started, by winning a state championship and posting a perfect 16-0 record complete, with also being named national champs. We knew ourselves that we had a good group, Kevin Mannix said of that 1989 year. Mannix, now a successful Odessa physical therapist, was a senior and played tailback and cornerback. Going into the season, the Panthers lost numerous standout seniors from the year before, including Mike Winchell at quarterback, Brian Chavez at tight end, and James Miles at running back. However, the 89 team had its own list of special players. In addition to Mannix, there was quarterback Stoney Case and wide receiver Lloyd Hill. For Case, there was no pressure taking over the starting quarterback position. Being the quarterback at Permian is what you expect, Case said during a recent phone interview. You're expected to perform, and it doesn't matter who came before you. There are lots of people who came before him, and it's not something I gave a second thought about. Hill would go on to set numerous school records and be one of the top receivers Permian has ever known. Case would go on to a successful pro football career, but in 1989, he would direct the Panthers' high-scoring offense as Permian scored more than 30 points in 10 games during that fall. For Case and every other player on that team, winning the state championship was a childhood dream. Well, it was something that growing up in Odessa and watching Permian ever since you were a kid, it was everything, Case said. It's what I dreamed of doing. At that time, I didn't have any other goals beyond winning state championships. That's what I was singularly focused on. It was definitely a fulfillment of what my earlier childhood was. But the team also had felt disrespected by the preseason expectations. No doubt, it was unfinished business going into the 1989 season, Mannix said. The thing was, we had full confidence in ourselves, but we weren't ranked in the top 10 going into the season. We weren't supposed to be the team to go undefeated. It was supposed to be the 88 team. Permian's offense would keep the scoreboards busy, and the defense posted consecutive shutouts as the Panthers outscored their opponents 201-0, which included a 51-0 win over Midland High, a 48-0 win over Abilene High, a 46-0 victory over non-district foe Dallas Jesuit, and a 56-0 romp over Abilene Cooper.
Hello, friends. This is Julie reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, October 2nd. Youth Center numbers surge. Alleged threats have landed many students in hot water, by Kim Smith, Odessa American. A few weeks ago, there were fewer than 10 kids locked up at the Ector County Youth Center. On Friday, there were 28. Historically, our referrals and population increase at the beginning of each school year and remain steady through the end of the school. However, this year we've seen a larger than normal amount of referrals. Most are related to threats made on campus, said Kevin Mann, director of the Ector County Juvenile Probation Department. A significant number of kids were arrested by Ector County Independent School District Police after allegedly threatening fellow students and teachers. A few are accused of more serious crimes, such as severely beating a teacher, bringing a gun to school, or stabbing a fellow student. Although legally prohibited from committing on specific kids, officials with the Ector County Probation Department said many of the adolescents who've been arrested for making verbal threats in recent days are first-time offenders whose immaturity got them in trouble and whose futures remain bright. When COVID-19 forced schools to shut down and students to learn remotely, they predicted there would be negative consequences, said Mayor Maria Sosa, assistant director of Ector County Juvenile Probation Department. These kids are being integrated back into society and sometimes just don't know how to handle certain situations because there's too much anxiety. Youth Center Intake Supervisor Amber Padilla said, "It affects adults so much. How could it not affect the kids?" Dee Belongun, a juvenile probation officer who handles felony cases, agreed. "These kids don't know how to socialize in person anymore. They're so used to associating with their friends through social media. I mean, these are kids who use emojis as sentences, so when they get into a public setting, they may not always know how to interact with somebody right off the bat," Belongun said. Many of the kids accused of making threats in recent days are either victims of bullying or bullies themselves, Sosa said. In some instances, they and their parents have told authorities they complained about being bullied and they reacted impulsively when bullying yet again, Sosa said. Studies have shown that the frontal lobe, the part of the brain that controls impulsivity and helps humans make decisions, isn't fully developed until age 25 or so. At the instance when the kids are being pushed around and kind of cornered, in a sense, by other kids, they say what they can say, and sometimes whatever is the scariest thing is that comes out of their mind. We know these kids aren't fully developed. Their frontal lobe is not functioning very well at the point, Sosa said. You just have word vomit. They spew and they say whatever they can to try themselves out of what tough situation. Then they end up in a place like this, a detention center. Other kids don't immediately realize the seriousness of their words, Padilla said. A lot of them say, "Oh, I was joking. I was kidding." I think the thing is to make the kids aware we can't joke like that. The kind of stuff is not anything to joke about anymore. Then grown into bigger incidents where people get hurt, Padilla said. The kids who made the threats but did not act upon them have shown remorse and been well-behaved thus far, said Albert Aguirre, facility administrator. In the past, such kids will have simply been referred to the juvenile probation department and not detained. But because of the explosion of cases, ECISD and the court believes a message needs to be sent about the inappropriateness of their words, Sosa said. They come in knowing what they did and said was wrong, and they shouldn't have said it. So I think it's a step, and it's helping them, and they're aware, Padilla said. If kids from all areas, it's kids from football, it's kids from band, it's kids from with good grades. I have kids with perfect attendance. It's all across the board, different kinds of kids, Sosa agreed. They're not the kids that social media has made them out to be, she said. The probation department reiterated what ECISD officials have been saying for the past couple of weeks. Parents need to have conversations with their kids about how they can resolve conflicts in an appropriate manner. Sosa and her colleagues said some situations start out with jokes and name-calling and then snowball. Whether the kids actively participate in bullying or stand by and say nothing, they just want to fit in, Belongan said. I think it's a lot harder to be a student these days. The things I hear these days, I don't remember hearing back in my day, Padilla said. I think it's a lot harder, and there's more pressure to just be mean to others for whatever reason. It's a battle to go to school, almost. Sosa and her colleagues also urge parents to start monitoring their kids' social media accounts and cell phones to get a better sense of what is going on in their lives. Students often act far differently at home than they do at school, and often influenced by what's seen on social media, Sosa said. While the kids are in the detention center, they attend classes taught by the alternative center teachers and can seek mental health counseling, Sosa said. Lately, she's been referring roughly 2 students a day for counseling services. For most, being in the detention center will be a life-changing experience, she said. They've never even gone before a trauma court. Their first time before a judge is because of criminal offense, and they're in full gear. They're shackled up. You know, it's their first experience. It's a really sad one, and it's a really bad one, Sosa said. The Juvenile Probation Department is working closely with ECISD leadership and police officers to reduce the number of kids being referred to the Juvenile Probation Department, Sosa said. Our offices are out there almost daily. They're out doing some visits, school visits, checking in on school counselors, Sosa said. We try to intervene with as many signs of bullying, whether it's our kids doing the bullying or the kids are being bullied. As for the kids facing more serious charges, Sosa said the department will be doing what it can to see that their needs while continuing to protect the community. Mann noted that the increase in school threats is happening at the same time as the department is seeing an increase in the number of kids being arrested on robbery and gun offenses. Referral to departments are 40% up over the last year at this time, he said. I really think this year, unfortunately, we're going to see record numbers of detention and referrals compared to the past years. Oil and gas prices. Who knows? Prices bounce as experts make their best predictions, by Bob Campbell. No one knows what will happen next with the energy industry because it changes from day to day and sometimes even hour by hour. Big companies hire the smallest people they can find, and they can do it to weigh the multitude of factors that make their best guess. Then sometimes the relative weights of the factors shift and the new balance spills all that applies. With the price of West Texas Intermediate crude oil at $82.25 per barrel and natural gas at $6.955 per gallon, British thermal units on Friday, industry spokesman said a lot of things are pushing in different directions, but the strong global demand and oil gas supply shortages should keep prices where American producers can make a profit. Permian Basin International Oil Show President Larry Richards of Odessa chuckled that anyone who could accurately predict prices would be a billionaire pretty quickly. I've learned that there are great business opportunities at either side of our cycles, but guessing what prices will do in the future is a gift I don't possess, Richards said. In Saudi Arabia's best interest to keep the prices over $70, so I think it will stay there unless Russia, Venezuela, or Iran are somehow able to dramatically increase their exports and get paid for them. The Saudis also want it under 110 to keep the U.S. shale players from starting big central improvements like frack fleets and rigs. OPEC has learned they're happy, and its range of chastised U.S. players, now focused on a more disciplined cash approach, are pretty happy in the 70s 110 range as well. Richard said natural gas is the big unknown of the equation. The price has been artificially depressed for years based on the BTU equivalent of oil, and several billion dollars have been spent depending the channel in Corpus Christi for liquefied natural gas subtankers and other subtankers, he said. It won't take many LGN terminals being built, especially the offloading facilities in Germany and other European sites, to spike in demand and subsequently the price for natural gas for a decade. I think we'll see a lot of more gas drilling in the years to come, here in the Permian Basin and elsewhere. Based on its capacity to produce energy, Richard said a million BTUs should trade for 1/6 the price of a barrel of oil. But even discounting transportation costs, gas is still way below that. The suggested significantly rising electricity costs for U.S. homes and businesses in the coming decade, but still at the deep discounts to the rest of the world due to our large natural gas reserves, he said. Texas Independent Producers and Royalty Owners Association President Ed Longnecker said aggressive federal interest rate hikes, recessionary fears, a conflicted future market, and a bearish sentiment will be counteractive by tight global supplies and growing demand exacerbated by a host of issues, including geological conflicts, Russian sanctions, the escalating energy crisis in Europe, the Strategic Petroleum Reserve release winding down, limited output from OPEC, plus whether an uptick in economic activity in China and poorly conceived federal energy policies. We should see upward pressure on commodity prices this year, which should continue in the first quarter as we start the new year undersupplied by 1 million to 1.5 million barrels per day, Longnecker said from Austin. Possibly two conservative oil future contracts are $76.71 per barrel in November, $76.18 in December, $75.45 in January, $74.61 in February, $73.81 in March, $73.09 in April, and $72.42 in May. Jason Moglen, president of the Texas Alliance of Energy Producers, noted the difficulty in predicting prices, but said the world will continue record amounts of coal for heating and electricity generations this winter. The best opportunity for industry and politicians here and abroad to reduce emissions in American natural gas, Moglen said from Austin, policies aimed at reducing the barriers to energy production. Transportation and should be elevated and supported by our elected officials. Panhandle Producers and Royalty Owners Association President Judy Stark said from the Amarillo natural gas will be in high demand. I think gas prices may increase a bit, but not too significantly, Stark said, because of supply and demand. The price will still be higher than it was when Trump was in office. At the point, natural gas is under $3, but now it's 60% higher. Predicting that oil, somewhat less mercurial than gas, will stay steady between $75 and $80, she said. That's certainly a good price if we can get the supply chain open enough to reduce costs. The biggest issue still lies with congressional spending and tax raising inflation to an all-time high. I think the supply chain and manufacturing problems don't get better. If we can't get permits from pipelines expediently, whether through Congress or Texas Railroad Commission, we will continue to create more expense for producers. So the price per barrel will not be as much as the cost of two or three times higher, Stark said. Texas Oil and Gas Association President Todd Staples said from Austin that even with the global disruption, strong demands for oil and gas will continue for the foreseeable future because the products derived are irreplaceable in meeting the everyday needs of families in Texas and across the world. Public policy plays a critical role in creating the certainty required for major capital investments in exploration, production, transportation, and refining of energy we need, Staples said. Unfortunately, policies coming out of Washington, like permitting delays and regulatory uncertainty, are actively discouraging domestic energy development, which can raise consumer prices and make our nation and trade alliances more dependent or less reliable, less responsible source of energy. And from Washington, D.C., Independent Petroleum Association of America, President, CEO Jeff Eiselman said producers are price takers, not price makers. As we approach winter, an annual season of increased demand, we urge the Biden administration to remember that prices are controlled by commodity markets, not producers or refiners, Edelman said. IPAA encourages the administration to convene with producers and discuss pathways for adequate supply of Americans and our European allies instead of making political attacks.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.